You gotta be,
Spread out. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. Yeah, you never know. Sometimes I get really contemplative, and sometimes I get really excited. That's kind of my range.
Welcome to the People of Portland and Beyond, episode 40. Today in studio with me today is Una Solitaire. Instagram handle is Miss Una Solitaire, all one word. You're a dancer at Kit Kat Club as well as Mary's Club. Why did you start going into stripping?
So I kind of was curious about strip clubs and what they were about, but like when I first heard about them, like I don't know what age, but you know, and they're like, oh, you know, what are you gonna do when you grow up? And I'm like, I don't know, I wanted to be all sorts of different things. And then you know, I learned about stripping and like, I don't mind being naked, I dance, you know, I took a lot of ballet and stuff growing up. I was like, I'd probably be okay at that, I'd probably do all right. That was kind of my thought. And then but it's still scary because it's infamous and you know, you're naked and so fast forward to I was in college, and a friend of mine, you know, so when I was 18 it was still illegal in the state of Oregon to dance as a minor. So I had to wait till I was 21. But I had a friend with a fake ID, so you know, she's, oh, you know, try it out, do this. And so I walked into a strip club, and this is Springfield, Oregon. So it was just two ladies at the bar, and they look at me and they're like, are you 21? And I'm like, no, I'm 20. And they're like, get out. And I'm like, but I can come and get out. I'm like, okay. So, you know, I was thwarted again. And then, fast forward a few more years, I'm 22 and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm working at like, I'm going to college at U of O. I'm like working in the library 10 hours a week. You know, I got some savings, but I'm living off of tuna fish and like macaroni and cheese and stuff. So,
ramen.
Right. You're like, you know, marijuana got me through college, 'cause I could eat all of the horrible food that
the edibles.
Yeah. Or just like, you know, when you're stoned, you get the munchies. So it's like, oh, this chili mac isn't
Wendy's,
as disgusting.
Taco Bell late night.
Yeah. And so then, you know, I finally auditioned at 22 and, you know, they hired me. But I still, you know, I walked in the door and I saw that the dancer was naked and I got scared and I walked out again. I'm not quite sure what I was thinking. Like, I thought it was like thong on. So I was like, wait, where do they keep their money? I'm so confused. But you know, I went back and then I started dancing and, you know, it was called, Hot Bodies. Oh, what street was it on? This was Eugene, Oregon. It wasn't 11th. I don't know. It was one of the main streets. It's like, you know how when you live in a town and then you don't live in a town, all that memory fades away and then you, I can't remember, but it was Hot Bodies. And then it was the office for like 3 months, and then they completely sold out and it was an office club. Like it was a real high, like three stages with all of these like like tiers of table dance areas, kind of like a coliseum or something. Like, yeah. It was really beautiful, but.
How much money did you make during your audition?
Oh, that's a good question. No private dance or anything. And yeah, and I left right after. So it was just that one being like, oh my gosh, people just like, they just, you're up there and then they give you money. That's cool. Like, it's so immediate.
Yeah.
The gratification, you know, it seems, yeah, it's nice that way. You don't have to wait 2 weeks for a check. And
definitely. Also, how did that audition go? That first audition you ever did?
It went well. I'm really comfortable on stage. I'm not comfortable writing what I'm about. Pardon me.
Interviewing with the job and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I feel like face-to-face interviews, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But like on paper, so I'm dyslexic. I needed a lot of tutoring to learn how to read, but you know, I have a philosophy degree now with a dance minor, so I'm not illiterate, but it's just you know, language is in our brain. Like, as babies, verbal language, we pick it up through osmosis. Written language isn't that way. So there's some brains that are more or less wired for it. And mine just needed a lot of help for written language and for math.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can read fine now. And it just, but I'm very anxious when it comes to spelling, when it comes to my handwriting is still terrible. So like writing out applications, I have huge anxiety. Like I just feel like a little nobody with nothing to add to that arena.
Yeah.
But on a stage, I feel like I do have something to add. Like,
So did this start in school when they made you do like spelling bees and stuff like that?
Good question. So my mom picked up my dyslexia pretty early on. Her younger sister had it. Mm-hmm. So it runs in the family. And she's like, oh, okay, I know where this is going. But basically, one of the definitions of dyslexia, I mean, we're in the realm of all definitions of all these, you know, different things, but is basically a child or an adult who has high vocabulary, high social comprehension, high, like there's other forms of intelligence that are very high, but reading, writing, spelling is low. So, you know, I was in like the red reading group. Like I was always in like the, you know, the low category, or whatever. You know, I had some teachers that said, oh, your creative writing is really great. I want to, you know, keep doing it. And I had other teachers saying, you're dumb. You can't do anything. You're extremely dumb. Try harder. Like, why can't you put A and B together? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying as hard as I can.
They literally said that to
you? Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's...
I heard the school system was bad in Oregon, but damn.
Well, I mean, I feel like the school system is like, is this whole, you know, there's lots of different ways to go about improving it. My personal MO is please fund public schools, please give teachers a living wage so that they can focus on their students. You know, any size 30 classroom is, you're not going to get individual attention. But if public schools are funded, if there are enough teachers to have and that's how I would, you know, go about it.
Yeah.
So I kind of came into the world just thinking that I really didn't have a lot to offer. And, I was very introverted. I was very depressed growing up. That's also, something that runs in my family. I every morning when I wake up, you know, I don't, you know, well, let's keep it fluid. So depression for me, for those of you who haven't experienced it, who don't have family members with depression, that you don't get days, but even the good days are peppered with this lack of light. Oh, you know, what is childhood? And I'm like, I mean, I have, you know, fleeting moments of happiness. You know, you have a gummy bear, you feel good, those kinds of things. But overall, no. Overall, my childhood, though, I was very lucky economically. I was middle class. Like, we didn't have enough money. You know, like, I didn't get a car when I turned 16, but I always had food. I always had clothes.
Yeah.
You know, my mom was able to pay off the house completely, like, no remortgaging, none of that, you know, so that I felt really lucky that we didn't lose our home suddenly.
Yeah.
But things in place, you know, mine was largely internal. Mm. My external upbringing, that's kind of what led me to believe, okay, there's something going on with the chemicals inside. You know, I shouldn't be looking for an exit off of the planet because my life is fine. You know, like, So what was it? 3 years ago, I was just at my primary care doctor. I like went to a new doctor and was just talking about, you know, my life and whatnot. And she said, well, it sounds, you know, like things are rough. Would you be open to try antidepressants? And I said, sure. You know, at that point I was, I think I would like just turn 30.
Yeah.
Or like 32. And, during my 20s, 25 to 30, I did a lot of, therapy. I did a lot of, shamanic work. I did a lot of other things non-medication wise to try to address my depression and my sleep issues.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I've exhausted everything else. I've done all of the acupuncture. I've done all of the journeying. I've done all of the soul searching. I quit drinking. I did a bunch of things and that still wasn't enough. So I went to medication and my third one, this was like a 2 or 3 year process. And now I found one that I've been on for almost 2 years now, maybe like a year and a half.
Which one is that?
10 milligrams of Lexapro.
Okay.
And I feel I'm starting to understand what normal feels like.
Right.
And I get it. I'm like, oh, wow. I see why people who aren't depressed don't understand it because it's foreign now. Just that storm in my brain doesn't happen. And what I've come to the conclusion, what was happening with me at least is that, my brain was releasing these stress chemicals and my, so what the brain does is says, oh, I have limited information. I will form a conclusion anyway. We do this all the time. You know, this is why humans are flawed, you know, and it's great and it's bad. But, you know, so I was thinking, oh man, you know, I keep thinking of my high school drama teacher. I got to keep talking about my high school drama teacher. And it's like, no, you're getting the stress hormone or chemical and then your brain is coming up with images.
Right.
And there was just a point where it's like, I don't think I have any more work to do around this. I think I've forgiven everyone. I've moved on.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I got some more questions about the
audition. Let's do that.
Going back to that first night you auditioned, now was that like a dead night? Did the girls kind of ignore you, shun you? How did you feel that night?
Okay. We did an audition in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Some clubs will do a working audition where they invite you to stay. I think maybe they might have offered it to me. I can't quite remember, but I just did the one stage set and took off. I was very, I'm kind of a guarded person in general in some ways. And definitely like, you know, what are the stereotypes of strip clubs? Well, people will, they'll steal your shit. They'll fuck you up, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I was guarded.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting people to be super friendly.
I would expect it to be a competitive environment. I don't know if strippers are friendly with each other.
Right.
Is it like that?
So my first night working, I just kind of tried to keep my head down just kind of get my bearings. There were some gals who were nice, and there were plenty of gals who just completely ignored me.
Yeah.
No one was outwardly mean or like, hey, you don't belong here. Fuck off.
Not like the new kid at high school.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing like that.
I just kind of, well, yeah, no, that's great. The new kid high school. Yeah. Cause like, you know, I moved around a bunch, and just in any sort of new social group,
yeah,
I tend to just sit back, observe, be really fucking quiet. And I kind of see who the players are, and I kind of see what the atmosphere is, and like, okay, well, what part of my personality fits here? What part of my personality doesn't, like, right, before I make any actions. So sometimes people think I'm really agreeable, but I'm really just observing and waiting for the right time to speak my mind.
Yeah.
And sometimes that time never happens. Sometimes I'm like, okay, you know, this group, whatever, I'm moving on. And if I'm more emotionally invested in a group or a person, then I'll start to say, hey, I'm noticing these things. Can we work on this or that?
Yeah.
Would
you say that the stage is your comfort zone?
I am pretty comfortable on the stage. It's like, it's all of...
From the first night?
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. Because so people are like, oh, you have all this wild hair and you're a stripper. You must be so brave. Yes and no. It's like, I do what's easy for me.
Yeah.
So
that's why you chose it, maybe.
Exactly. So
you enjoy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah. I have a strong theater background. Well, I don't know, strong. Like I did lots of dance and theater while I was in high school.
Yeah.
And this was largely due to my mother. I was very lucky that she would, you know, push me to get out there and do things. I wanted to sit in my room and cry all day. And she's like, no, do something active. So, and theater had really helped her in her college years. She did a lot of political theater.
Yeah.
And that was kind of her artistic expression. And so I really lucked out that we both had a bit of an artistic impulse, and that
she understood.
Yeah.
Unlike my mom.
Oh no.
Discouraged music and to get a normal 9-to-5 job.
Oh God.
Then I moved to Portland.
Well, there you go.
Exactly.
and now we're doing unique things on our own terms.
Yeah. Exactly. What are some rude things that guys will do at a strip club that they may not be aware of?
Okay. This is a good one. Rude things that, and I'll expand this to women customers as well.
Yeah, why not?
Just because, yeah, there's a lot of more ladies coming out and
they could feel entitled being a woman that they could do anything. Who knows?
It happens sometimes, you know. And so one of the things that I've actually been starting to thinking about a lot on along these lines is so when a dancer comes and talks to you at a club, we're going to ask you eventually if you want a private dance.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, don't know this. Okay, I'm going to stay focused. So if you don't want to have a dance, that's fine. We're just going to ask, we're just like, I want to, you know, sit down and say hi and get to know you a little bit. You know, you're like, okay, you know, I don't want to dance right now. Don't give me a reason why.
Right.
I don't care if you're married. I don't care if you have enough money or don't have enough money. But I think what happens is that people, it's usually really offensive.
Right.
Because like whatever that reason is, if I sit down and talk to you and you know that you don't want to get a dance, just tell me soon in the conversation, and that's fine. Yeah,
you appreciate honesty.
Exactly.
And not wasting your time.
I appreciate honesty and not wasting my time, but it's just so many times people will give these reasons and it makes me really angry.
Yeah.
And if you just say, no, thank you. Well, that, thank you so much. Have a great day. Have a great rest of your time. If you ever change your mind, let me know. If there's another dancer I can grab for you, let me know. Perfect.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when people are like, I can't get a dance, I'm married. or any excuse, I'm like, well, then what are you doing here? Why are you here? If that's literally how it goes. And someone said to me recently, no, I don't want to get a dance. I work for my money. I found that very offensive. And it was hard for me to.
Wow. They said that.
Yeah.
Like you don't work for it.
Exactly. And that's, you know, what you're doing. So I lost my temper and I apologize, in that moment. But I think the core thing to take away is that we really don't need your reasons why you don't want to dance. And when you give them to us, it hurts us.
Yeah.
Because you've decided to come in to the used car lot to not buy a car.
You know, seriously.
You've come,
just,
you know,
looking around, like, today.
You know, and it's like, I mean, maybe, oh, I'm here with my friends. I'm overwhelmed. I don't really want to be here. Like, okay, that's maybe that one I can kind of deal with. But it's like, so that's, I think, a good example of things that people don't realize that they're pushing our buttons when they are. Like, you think you're being nice by giving a reason, but just say no, thank you. That's fine.
Exactly.
That's fine. Because whatever your reasons are is just going to make me ask, well, what the fuck are you doing here and why are you talking to me? If you knew the whole time that, you know.
Exactly. I agree with that. What do you think about these strip clubs that don't go full nude? Do you believe in that? Or?
Well, I mean, the laws are different places.
Yeah.
And, you know, state rights, federal rights. I'm all on board.
Okay.
You know, if the states want to have some different laws. And it is based on the culture of the area and the people in the area. So I understand why people would want to not have alcohol and touch allowed in the same club. I feel like that's a common, that a lot of the...
Right. I was going to ask you, actually.
Uh-huh?
Do you think that clubs are going to start allowing cannabis use in clubs? Because it kind of dissuades non-drinkers from going.
I would love to see more of that. I do know that at Kit Kat Club, we do offer a CBD-infused cola. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah! So it's not THC. It won't give you a mental high. It will give you the body high.
Right.
But it's a great non-alcoholic option.
People like smoking weed in the outside, I guess, but it's best it's going to get, I guess, for now.
Yeah. I feel like Portland definitely is the place, you know, like Portland, Colorado, but probably Portland, because, like, I don't know what the Colorado strip club scene is, but right. I know that the weed community and the strip club community in Portland are both very vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm hopeful to see more, you know, cannabis food, just as the laws change, as the laws develop.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. I feel like it's a very safe alternative too, because it does relax people.
Yeah.
It doesn't make people as outgoing as alcohol does.
But it mellows them.
But it mellows you. And
maybe like the last 2 hours would be weed only.
Right. Yeah. That, you know, that might be neat. Yeah. And it doesn't give you that lack of impulse control.
Yeah.
So I feel like it might be a great way for the customers to relax and turn the brain off and get into the experience of the strip club. But our, you know, security team and, like, all of us, you know, people when they drink do get wild and are not always on their best behavior. So we're always balancing the fun of that.
Mm-hmm. What's the nicest thing that anyone's ever done for you?
Ever done for me?
It's a hard one.
Huh. What's the nicest thing?
Well, lately that you can remember then.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I just automatically want to change it to, like, what's the nicest thing you can do for a stripper?
What's the nicest?
That's not what you asked.
Well, if that's what you know, then let's change it. Yeah.
Okay. I love it when pretty much I think the nicest thing that you can do is ask what the rules are and follow them. And if you don't like the rules, try a different club.
Yeah.
I really think that's the nicest thing.
I agree.
But what, you know, customers, like, you know, they'll give presents and you know, and that's all, and that's sweet.
Yeah.
What
are some interesting ways that guys have gotten themselves kicked out of the club?
Interesting ways.
Or just what are some of the noteworthy ways that they've been kicked out?
Man, I feel like, oh man, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, there's where we like to, you know, these chaotic places where rough stuff happens, and just like my little inner sweetheart, it just doesn't like to, but I get the question. So it's like, you know, I always, at the end of the day, I want people to have a good time and I don't want them to get kicked out, but sometimes people are awful. And not that they're awful people, but they behave in awful ways in those moments and we need them to leave. Usually it involves touch boundaries. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, like, there was, I mean, honestly, I really love the security that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really big, point for me of whether or not I stay at a club. If I feel like security is listening to me and that, so long as I'm not a complete ball of mess, that we're going to get along and we're going to help each other out, then that's a club that I want to stay at. Because if you can trust your security and when they have your back, it just makes life so, so much better. And it's like sometimes, you know, people do resist. They've decided to touch, you know, a dancer inappropriately, or they've, you know, not, well, I mean, technically, I think that's pretty much the only reasons that we can kick people out is if they're physically harming dancers or other patrons.
Or I guess exposure or something.
Yeah. You can't.
Has anyone ever whipped it out in the club?
I have not experienced that.
Has anyone ever tried getting a lap dance or something?
Like at while they're exposed?
Yeah.
Or no, I haven't experienced. No.
Okay. Do you think the speed limit should be higher than 55 miles an hour?
Yeah.
How fast do you think it should go? Germany, like no speed limit?
Well, I don't think Americans are ready for that.
Germany also has the no nudity laws too. They're not ready for that.
or full nudity?
Yeah,
or,
you can be nude in Germany and there's no law against it. It's like the only country, basically.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You can just walk down the street and not be penalized. They're very like open-minded over there.
Yeah. So I feel that non-sexual nudity is so important.
I do.
For us as a culture to understand how to respect naked women.
It fetishizes it, the fact that we do this.
Yeah.
So we need to make it more mainstream and not cover kids' eyes if a naked body's around, but allow them to see R-rated movies where violence is, heads are getting blown off.
Right. Right. And I thought of kind of a funny like left wing, right wing mix. So I'm kind of in the center politically.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I don't know, this is people are, some of you are not going to like me for saying this, but I was thinking of, you know, of like, you know, the hijab and like the full covering or any sort of like, okay, you must be modest because the male will lose control.
Yeah.
That's basically a trigger warning. That's basically, you know, the conservative saying, hey, I don't want to see nudity unless I'm ready. So it's like the kind of reverse snowflake.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, you guys, just like both of you are doing silly things on both ends.
Right. Exactly.
Where You know,
the person that can see you naked through your window, but they continue to look. And why don't you just not look at this window? There's like a million things you can look at.
Yeah. Or it's just like, it just doesn't really like matter as much. So like a friend of mine grew up in Paraguay where it's just casual nudity is fine.
Yeah.
So, so he'll, you know, just like doesn't bat an eye at any, you know, like breasts or whatever, because you know, he's like, well, that'll come to me if they want to. And if they don't, that's fine, you know, and we'll actually just like, you know, I kind of just want, you know, just want to be around naked people. So,
yeah.
Well, and the other thing that nudity does is it'll take a little bit of class out of how we perceive each other.
It's true.
And I feel like there's something really beautiful to being comfortable in your body. So, okay. So here's another reason why stripping always appealed to me is that I do enjoy being naked. I do not like being restricted. I do not like wearing clothes. I like feeling the sun. I like feeling the wind. Like if like swimming naked in a river, like there's just something primal and just human. There's just something of like us existing.
Yeah.
You know, so let's get back to that. Like, you know, nudity can be sexual, but it's also, I mean, like we're robbing of ourselves of being comfortable in our damn skin. And of course we have all of these psychological dysfunctions that stem from that in my mind.
You want to feel more. So with being naked, you can feel everything way more.
Yeah.
And it's more about being honest too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't lie to someone when you're completely naked.
Well, and you can't make a mistake.
Yeah.
So I don't like dresses because I like to sit like this.
Right.
You know, I have wide hips. Mm. I have duck feet. So like sitting, so doing 3 years of burlesque where I do my hips hurt. That physically hurts my body to walk in a pencil skirt. I can't walk. Like it'll get locked in a turn in position.
Yeah.
So there's something about, being comfortable in your own skin that's wildly important to me. And the funny thing, so about like theater, so just going back I'll bring it back in, I promise, is that I used to, well, I still do. Quick changes terrify me. And it's not so much that the audience will see me naked, but that I'm making a mistake.
Yeah.
So it baffled me for a while because it was just there was one play I did in high school, and my character was a ballet dancer, and I had to do a full nude quick change from a day where You Can't Take It With You, okay, for those of you who want to know, and then I had to go full ballet outfit, like tights, everything, like, and I had like no time.
Yeah.
To do this. So I was like, how does that stress me out so much? But like dancing naked on stage, zero problem.
And right.
It's the social context. It's the audience. It's like, you know, when you guys go at my vagina, I feel ashamed. But when someone goes, you're beautiful, then I love it.
Nice.
And that's what people don't realize happens in strip clubs, is that there's this huge body appreciation. You know, it's not the dirty old man, it's the nice old man
appreciating art.
Yeah. You know, who, like, I just want to get rid of that dirty old man concept, because like young guys are fucking assholes too, you know. Age has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But older gentlemen,
I heard they tip better in strip clubs.
Yes. Huh?
So they get all the attention when they come in.
that's what people don't know. And on attention, I don't know if you want to launch into this, but you know, sometimes like people, like you can see it in their eyes that they want attention.
Really?
You know, and sometimes like they don't. So it's like, how do you navigate how much attention you want to give?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, so basically what I want to say is, if you want a lot of attention from a stripper, A, there's no guarantee that you're going to get it.
Yeah.
But tipping as much as you can will help a lot.
Uh-huh.
If you, you know, and also like the unspoken rules of tipping are so different across the country, across the state, across the city. So what I prefer is if there's money in the hands, like people do the money fan or money on the body, I tend to ignore that because it's literally not mine yet. And if there's money on the stage, well, oh, there's money in front of you. Well, let me thank you. You know, you have released, you know, that $5 bill or that $2, you know, or that one or, you know, or whatever. And I see it and it's right in front of you. And you're waiting. Then I'm like, boom, I'm there.
Yeah.
I run to those clients.
Yeah. And I also noticed that sometimes the stripper will do like a stage lap dance. Sometimes they won't. Do you do that? And what are the factors of when you would do it, why you would do it?
Good call. Large bills.
Yeah.
And it does depend on the crowd. So but a large bill will do it. Like if I pretty much, depending on the rules of the club, if I get tipped a 20, I will stop and do my best thing that I can do, which is usually a stage invert.
Yeah.
So, you know, while I'll kind of, balance my upper body on their lap and have a nice little butt wiggle in the face.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I will definitely do that. If so, a couple logistics. When it's like a rockin' night.
Yeah.
We have 6 minutes to pay attention to everybody at our rack. So just think about that, you know. So we're trying to get our 3 minutes songs. We all usually have two songs.
Yeah.
So if it's a full rack, that's, you know. So what I'll try to do is I try to. So if someone tips like $1, I'll acknowledge them. I'll swipe it. I'll smile. I'll say thank you.
Yeah.
That's about it. Someone does $2, then I'll do some body contact because, hey, that's twice as much.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, you know, and those little bits, like we're really trying to through our body language show you the rewards of tipping more.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, oh, you're not tipping enough. Like that just kills the vibe.
Yeah.
I've been that dancer. I'm trying not to be that dancer. We've all gotten frustrated. We've all been there, but
yeah.
So if I see a large bill or, you know, sometimes I'll do more for less if there's a full stage of people holding back.
Yeah.
Just to like, be like, hey, everybody has $1 in front of you. This guy has two. I will do something great for that guy first.
Yeah.
And then I'll wait until you have $2 in front of you before. We do try to maximize our profits, but the way to think about it is that if you tip us, we're going to give you more attention. So we're also trying to maximize your fun. I don't enjoy holding back. I want to give you attention.
Yeah.
I want to love on you, but if there's no money or if there's $1, then I can't give it away because it just sets the wrong precedent.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Yeah.
You can't give everything away. You gotta leave wanting more.
Yeah.
How often are you giving a lap dance on average if you're working per night?
Cool. Yeah. You know, every shift is a bit of a roller coaster. People tend to come and go in waves. Service industry folk will tell you, it's not just like lunch and dinner rush, like, you know, just certain types of the day will, more people tend to come in at night than during a mid or a day shift.
Yeah.
But even during there tends to, you know, like sometimes, so it's really hit or miss. There are shifts. There are sometimes I'll have three shifts in a row where I won't do any dances.
Mm.
And it's not because I'm not trying. It's just winter and people are broke and, you know, you just gotta keep, you know, going through those shifts, and then there are others that are much busier.
Yeah.
But I'd average one or two dances a shift.
Okay.
I'd say, but there are definitely some with zero, and then there are some where I'll have like two or three people who want to get 3 for 100, and those shifts are great.
Uh huh. Have you ever had a guy shoot a load of cum on you during a dance?
No.
Would you get mad if it happened?
I feel that as a sex worker, so long as the client is respecting my boundaries,
yeah.
If you come in your pants, I don't mind. You know,
just did your job.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, this is a sexual experience, and
there was stimulation.
Exactly. And if we really want to reduce stigma and shaming when it comes to sexual expression, how could I chide someone for enjoying my dance that much? You know,
shouldn't like, judge. Shouldn't judge.
Exactly. You know, I don't encourage it. I don't do grinding dances. I don't, the goal of my dances isn't to make a client ejaculate, but
good experience.
But yeah, you know, it's like I feel like there's just so much fear around sexuality right now.
Yeah.
And in my dances, I want to make a space where we can metaphorically hold each other in these feelings,
yeah,
and in these experiences. So it is kind of a spiritual experience or a meditative journey for me, where I really love seeing my clients relax and be present in the moment. And so long as, you know, your hands aren't going for me, then I'm happy.
Yeah. How much would you make on a good night?
I've been very lucky, that I've, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Even though I'm almost 36, I've been steadily making more and more.
Yeah.
Through my career, as I understand clients, as I understand business, as I understand, and I'm very comfortable in my home clubs. Yeah. Nice. So, I've had some good nights. I've gotten to 1,000, nice, a few times. So that feels really good. I've never gotten to 2. I've never gotten, really that much over. I haven't really gotten to 12 or 13, but.
What's the longest amount of hours you've worked?
Sometimes I do doubles. I like to do doubles, just cause I only have to do my makeup once.
Yeah.
That day, and I feel like, you know, I'm kind of like, right. And there's days that more people spend money than other days. So like, I love doing a double on Friday or Saturday, and then I get like another day off that week. It's kind of how it hours. Which sounds nice. It's not a good eight. It's not a full 8-hour shift. And then, yeah, and this is just Portland. Like I'm sure it's different in other states. Another goal would be about 10 hours.
Okay.
But they're more intense. There's, you know, there's no pay, there's no paid breaks, there's no health insurance. So it's kind of, so even though it's a shorter shift, it's a sprint. It's me right now. I'm not making money.
Right. Do you ever go home early because it's really dead?
Rarely.
Yeah.
Especially now that I have medication that helps me mentally. I've been calling off a lot less. I've been leaving early a lot. Or no, you know, it really just takes one or two people to turn around a shift. And more often than not, if I'm 4 hours into my shift and I still have $80, but I have 1 hour left,
yeah,
some guy will walk in and get 3 for 100, you know, maybe 2. So yeah, then suddenly, you know, I'm like, oh wow, I had no money, but I stuck it out. Now I have 300. Cool. Mm-hmm. So
that's when you got to pull out the promos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you ever date a customer?
All right. This is a great question. Because it is about connection.
Yeah.
And I do try to find clients that I have a natural connection with because, hey, it's easier to enjoy my time with them. It's easier to sell a dance with someone I am actually not as guarded around.
Right.
And I have done it. I've dated two customers and I feel like for me personally, I'm not saying don't do it. Don't hope for it. Just, it's a fantasy. Keep it as a fantasy.
Yeah.
Enjoy that fantasy. Because it feels like whatever that connection started in the club, and there's some impetus of that connection that will linger in the relationship. So the first time that I did this, I feel like I was never seen as anything more or less than a stripper.
Okay.
And I feel like people who meet me in the club have a much harder time of seeing me for who I am because you're really meeting an idealized version of myself.
Yeah.
Who is more perfect than I am for real. Like I'm putting on like my best, most loving, or, you know, like I am being so juicy and wonderful to be around and I can't maintain that 24/7.
Dating Howard Stern, the DJ, not Howard Stern, the human.
Right.
He's not the same person on the mic.
Exactly.
Same thing with me.
Exactly. So I feel like that was kind of a rude awakening for me when I was like, oh, you never saw me. And then I was hurt in those relationships that started in the strip club that were customers. Because they weren't able to see me as who I am. And then the other one, I felt like, there was that impetus or that kernel of the club that like we kind of bonded over. And that was drinking. So there was another relationship that I had that started in the club, but I ended up just going off the deep end with my drinking.
Yeah.
With this person, regardless of how beautiful and amazing he still is.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like those connections that happen in a moment of passion might be best left and remembered in those moments of passion.
Yeah, pretty much agree. Have you ever done a collaborative dance with another stripper?
Yes.
How does that work?
It's pretty fun, honestly.
Do you coordinate it in advance?
so all, you know, pretty much all stripper movement, it's improvised. You know, we have some moves that we do, but as far as like, you know, timing and like set choreography, most of us aren't really
trained.
Well,
I was gonna ask, is there a training you did for lap dance, or did you just feel it out?
You just kind of gotta.
I saw like a YouTube instructional video when I was doing some research beforehand, and I was like, I wonder if strippers watch how to do the lap dance.
I mean, you know, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, a form. You know, form and energy. So, you know, it's good. Sometimes you want to know the form first,
yeah,
and then to let the energy flow. But I feel like so much of strippers' dance is improv because we're reacting to you. We're reacting to the client in every second. You know, so if a hand comes up, I have to change my choreography.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have to do a different kind of dance. So, yes, we do dances with other dancers. I love, especially if, so I'm not very territorial. I know that there are some places that are very competitive and very territorial. I like cooperative environments.
Yeah.
So if, you, and mostly I like that for the customer, for the client that comes in. Because I don't want them to feel torn through by a bunch of like territory wars going on, you know, like I want them to get a dance from whoever they connect with.
Yeah.
So if I'm talking to a customer and I walk out, or we could, both of us could be amazing. And a lot of us.
Yeah. Would they ever have not in the lap dances though?
We'll do, It depends on the club. Some stages are just that way. Old Boom Boom Room used to have one stage set up.
Yeah.
Kit Kat Club, the catwalk is that way. It's a narrow catwalk with two poles and a bunch of VIP booths. So there's going to be two dancers. But mostly we're solo performers. Like, it's your stage. And again, some dancers can be really territorial about that. And
yeah.
Whatnot, but you know, there's also birthday and bachelor dances. So
I was going to ask, do you do bachelor parties?
Yes, yes.
Does it get crazier and wilder? Do they expect more of you, like under the table stuff? What is that like?
Well, honestly, I feel like bachelor parties, the pros and cons. So what I've had to remind myself at bachelor parties is that this is their big hurrah.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting a lot of guys who are just being drug along because it's a bachelor party. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
And so some of them are a little bit more wild. They're not used to clubs. They don't know the rules. But you know, the good ones don't ask for extras because they're getting married. You know,
right. I agree with that.
So it's mostly the guys asking for extras are people from out of town or, you know, who just don't know. And
yeah,
honestly, I wish prostitution was legal. I wish I could hand out cards to people and being like, hey, this is what I do. If you want something more like this, this lady, this guy, you know, whatever, go, yeah. You know, and then we can have more of a community and a network.
But yeah.
It's illegal to do that because prostitution is still consensual sex work. Is still illegal.
Yep. Doesn't stop them from asking every single party, though, I'm sure.
Correct. And I've kind of gotten a lot more lenient about this as I've gotten older because it's just, I mean, because you can get upset every time somebody propositions you in a strip club, or you could just understand that that is going to happen.
If it's happening over and over again, you can just accept that most guys are going to ask that.
Right. And as long as prostitution is illegal,
yeah,
it makes sense.
Except in Rhode Island. Yeah.
Right. Except in Rhode Island. No.
Exactly.
And, was it right outside of Vegas? It's not Vegas proper, but it's right outside somewhere.
I think so. It sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as long as it's illegal, I have compassion for people asking because it's a hard question to ask.
Yeah.
And it's the oldest profession on the planet, so I don't expect men to stop asking.
Exactly. Does the bartender ever make more than the dancers?
I'm sure. It depends on the shift. It depends on the club. I've never keeping track. I've never really asked a bartender what they made.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
gonna tell you.
But there are some shifts
where people are drinking more than...
Well, and it's also basic math because you have 1 to 2 bartenders. And you have 2 to 18 to 30 dancers.
1 or 2 drinks per hour per person.
Right. You know, and it's like, you know, bartenders aren't selling dances, you know, but like there are some shifts where you kind of get the feeling that some of the bartenders are making more than some of the dancers. If it's a really slow night and most of the time, people coming in will get drinks, even if they don't plan on getting dances, even if they don't plan on tipping dancers.
Yeah.
They, you know, in most bars, there is a 1 drink minimum, so you have to.
Right.
So I think that happens. I don't think it's common. And at the end of the day, I hope that everyone is making enough money to have the lifestyle that they want.
Yeah, I would agree too. What else do you like to do around Portland for fun?
Oh man, so I'm in that gotta make my mark on the world before I die mode.
Yeah.
So I don't, I'm introverted. I don't like big crowds. I don't go to parties. I don't drink. Like I don't do drugs. Like I don't.
Really a straight edge.
I smoke weed.
Yeah. Okay.
I smoke weed and it's like, you know, I'll do some special occasion drugs. Yeah. Like, you know, I'll do, you know, if I'm going out into the woods, I'll get some mushrooms or, you know, I'll do acid from time to time, but I'm not like a recreational partier. Like I'm not a microdoser. Like I don't, you know, I've never done ecstasy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so honestly, like when it's my day off, like if I can just not go anywhere that day, I'm happy. So like when I need to recharge my battery, I do introverted, you know, I play video games, I lay in the sun, I might like do a solo thing, but like stuff around town for fun. Like I get asked that question a lot because there's more tourists coming in and yeah. a lot of people from out of town will be like, oh, I've never been to Portland. What's cool to do around here?
And have you ever enjoyed the nightclub scene?
So not so much because I went through my heavy drinking phase in Eugene.
Okay.
So
not many nightclubs there.
No, there weren't. I just went to 80s night and like there's, you know, there's like four bars, but it was kind of good for me because I got my horrible person phase out of the way. Well, I was a problem drunk. I was very bad.
Yeah.
I was very bad. But no, I would get sick and make bad choices, and I would have gotten into a lot more trouble if I were up here. I think than being down there.
Yeah.
And also I'm glad I got that all out of my system before I ventured into this community.
Uh-huh.
Because news travels fast and we love drama, and now I can kind of stay out of it as much as I can. Whereas if I was still drinking, then I, you know,
yeah,
you do what drunk people do. You know, you sleep with the wrong person, you get mad at the wrong person, you forget that you were a jerk, and you know, so yeah, I tend to hang out by myself or,
So you have more guy friends or more girlfriends?
Good question. I grew up as a tomboy, so I definitely had more guy friends. When, you know, like grade school, middle school, I was very much a lone wolf. I was an only child, and I'd have like one gal pal that yeah. was, you know, I'm a Gemini. I can take like, you know, one team person, mm-hmm. you know, you and me against the world. And that's kind of my happy place.
Yeah.
And then when middle school, high school hit, I just couldn't maintain my girlfriendships as well. And I was kind of like, you know, the one girl in a group of like four nerdy guys, because
mm-hmm.
I was very nerdy. I was not, I didn't dress to look good. I was just trying to get through my day done. And high school, college, I definitely fell into a group of solid dudes who are like my nerd dude clan. And, you know, we still keep it
hard
because I'm just like all the little buttons and it's like,
yeah,
you know, and then like the thing that kind of works. I'm like, no, but this is the Xbox. I have to press this button. And it's just, yeah. but I'll do computer universes. I'm not X in the being good at the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I just like to zone out and do my daily tasks and look at the artificial universe.
Maybe a game like Stardew Valley. So you're just like farming casually. What are you playing right now?
I'm not really playing much right now. I've been doing a lot of artistic things. I've pretty much just, you know, grabbing downtime when I can. I'm trying to produce my own film. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting ready for another film that my good friend Dylan is starting up. Let's see, we're going to have a read through of that script this Saturday, which I'm super stoked on.
Nice.
So so Dylan Hillerman, producer of Guignol Fest, which is a yearly 72-hour horror film festival.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going on for, I'm not going to say how many years because I know I'll get it wrong, but I've been doing it for like 5 or 6. So I had fun doing that and was like, and, you know, and he did other plays. So we did a shock opera for the past 2 years, which is a bunch of women cross-dressing as the Alice Cooper band.
Okay.
And it's really fun. I get to play Glenn Buxton, who's the guitar player, and he's, you know, like the, not sassy, but, you know, he's like the quiet, like little quips kind of guy. So that's really fun to play this like support, like, after being a solo artist, to like be like a really solid support character is really fun. And so we've been doing that for a couple of years. We're doing the movie version this year, which is really great. And Dylan and his wife Julia are also going to be producing The Night Attacks, which is their original horror film that we're doing. And I won't no spoilers, I won't say anything else about it.
Which film festival you're submitting it to?
I don't know.
What have you submitted to in the past?
This is our, let's see, I've done the 72-hour ones,
mm-hmm.
But I haven't submitted any of those to festivals. They're like 10-minute shorts.
Would you submit to the Hump Day Festival?
Oh, good question. I've thought about it.
Yeah.
And I kind of had plans to last year, and then I just got distracted doing other things.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great guest, yeah.
So did we get through all of them or some of them? Or?
We did get through all of them, and hopefully I can have you on back sometime, see how the film went.
Yeah, fingers crossed. It's always two steps forward, one step back, and I try to, because I always think big, so with this project, I'm like, okay, we're going to do a one act.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to do vignettes. It's going to be 10 minutes, two actors, and it's still taken, you know, I thought it would take a month, and it's like we're on 3 months. Uh-huh. And it's fine, you know, it's fine. It'll happen.
Cool. Well, looking forward to it. Thanks for coming in again.
Distracted.
Should bring
Thanks,
Lucy
guys.
On the show. Would you leave your life right? It's broken, it's darkness I could never show. If I told you you were right, would you take my hand tonight? If I told you to try, would you believe your life right?
I'm off duty, ho.
It's a little meow.
Ew. All right, to end it.